Wait, you did KP at 7 years old?
I definitely did. Who doesn't do KP at 7 years old?
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and welcome to Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by Sergeant First Class Todd Smelser. He's with our G4 office. You do the footballs mostly over there.
Yes, sir.
And then you're with the 81st Brigade on the M-Day side as a traditional guard soldier.
Yes, sir.
And you're here to share kind of your guard story about being a traditional guardsman, working full time, your military family history, being a comedian, and kind of what the National Guard means to you. So I appreciate you coming on.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. Intro and background on yourself.
Sergeant First Class Todd Smelser. I work for the G4. I am the state football manager. On the M-Day side, I am the Seabird NCO for the 81st Brigade. I am the primary advisor to the brigade commander on all aspects chemical, whether it's protection, defense, mitigation processes, decontamination, which is, it sounds very impressive, but it's not.
So for those that have no clue what CBURN means, kind of give them what the acronym actually
chemical,
means.
Biological, radiological, and nuclear. So for the warfighter, I advise the commander, and the commander advises the battalion. So if there is a chemical threat or a CBURN threat in whatever aspect, how do we mitigate? How do we protect ourselves? And if we do have to fight in that environment, how are we going to decontaminate or other considerations for the battle space?
Yeah. So how'd you get into the Guard?
Well, I was born and raised in the mean streets of Spokane, Washington, and I was working at Skipper's Seafood and Chowder House. I was their parrot. And for those of a certain age that remember Skipper's, great food. And I had every night at the close, you had to clean out the deep fat fryers. And there's nothing more fun than trying to put 10, 15 gallons of hot oil through a filter. Well, I didn't close the gate valve perfectly on one of the filters, and all of that oil went on the ground. After 57 mop heads later, my boss was kind of unhappy, but he understood things happen. And I can't do this. My dad was in the National Guard. He was with one of the 161 and Charlie 161 way back in the day, joined in 1959, retired in 1980. And he made a good career out of it. My fifth grade teacher was the one of the 161 battalion commander, and the brigade commander, my dad's insurance agent, was Terry Reed. So it's, and also my wife's dad served with my father, and I'll get into that story later. But I had no ambition to go to college. I had no money to go to college, and I probably wasn't mature enough to go and get any degree. So I told my dad, I said, look, I want to join up. What do? I had decent ASVAB scores. Let's go talk to the Army National Guard recruiters. So we went up to Lincoln Heights and on the South Hill, and all they were pushing were medical. And it wasn't the 68 whiskey, it was in the medical career field. And it was a very hard push, hard sell. My dad just wasn't impressed by it. And I had no idea what they were talking about. My dad said, let's go talk to the Air Guard recruiters. So we did. And I talked to some really grizzly master sergeant who had been in for 100,000 years. And I went out to Geiger Field, and I went out to Fairchild, looked at some of the options they had. Then they took me to the 105th Tactical Control Squadron. And if you're driving into Spokane coming out of Cheney, look up at the right-hand side. It is now it's the 242 Combat Communications Squadron. At the time, it was a Nike or Nike Atlas anti-ballistic missile site, and they converted that to the 105th Tactical Control Squadron. And they introduced me to some of the vehicle maintainers, and I was very impressed. It was no BS. It was down and dirty, and I like working on cars. So I joined the Air National Guard as a vehicle mechanic. Went to Lackland Air Force Base, went to Chanute Air Force Base for my training. I liked it so much. About a year later, I wanted to go active duty. I love the discipline. I like the friendships. I had a decent home life, but my parents divorced when I was 12. And I kind of floated around. I was like, what do I want to do? But I like the discipline. I like the structure. And I like the friendships that I made. Went active duty a year later. Was stationed in Homestead, Florida. Left about 6 months before Hurricane Andrew went through. Got stationed in Germany, which was an absolute blast. I was at the 609th Tactical Control Squadron, which is about 40 clicks east of Hanover. And so a tactical control squadron is a mobile tactical air control. We got the field, or we're worldwide deployable. We'd set up a bunch of connexes that would open up on the sides and the bottom, and it would be radar controllers. They're all officers in it. They were air traffic controllers for the battle space. And that was a lot of fun. And then I got stationed at Luke Air Force Base, and I got out in 93, lived in Phoenix for a few years, floated around, worked a bunch of odd jobs, moved back to Spokane, worked some jobs. And in 2002, I felt I wanted to join again. I missed wearing the uniform. I liked everything it represented. And I got hired full time in the G4 as an equipment specialist. I was working with some friends, or a couple guys from my detachment in Spokane in the Seaburn world. They were doing the reset team. So as the brigade came back from their like first deployment, as the equipment needed to be technical inspected, we would write it up and turn it in so the big army could pay for it. My write-ups were a lot since I was a former vehicle mechanic, and they liked the product they saw, and I got hired full time. I started doing that for 7-8 years. Then I worked in food service for a while with Mr. Frank Gibson. And Frank, if you're out there, hello. For those who know Frank, he was kind of a mercurial individual, fun to work for. And then I started working with Major Tony Lonsdale on flipples, and I developed affinity for it. A lot of processes, and I've been doing that for 11 years now.
So any memories of being a kid growing up in the Guard that kind of stand out to you?
Oh, absolutely. This is probably 1976. My dad was at Yakima Training Center and he said, hey, this is my last AT I'm going to be doing. And would you like to come down? So at 7 years old, I flew from Spokane to Yakima. My dad picked me up in an old 1950s sedan. And I went up to Badger Gap at 7 years old. Or Badger Gap area. And my dad put me on KP at 7 years old. So when I had some of these younger soldiers that had to do KP every other couple of days, I needed to remind them at 7 years old, I was in a field kitchen handing out apples with a white hat. And so that's, Badger Gap, 1977. So it's, I wouldn't say their memories, possibly some PTSD for bringing that up. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, sir. I'll have to go take the rest of the day off now.
Outside the Guard, you also do comedy.
Yes.
Explain how you got into comedy.
1997, living in Spokane, Washington, my wife at the time, or Lisa, I think that's her name. That is Lisa. Went to a comedy show, never been one before. And the comic's name was Mike Wally Walters. And he was a mix between Don Rickles and Dom DeLuise. He had the old, one of those Tam O'Shanter caps on. Just hysterical. Then Nick, who owned the club, Nick Tyson, if you're out there, love you, miss you, Nick. He did a set and did some jokes, a little bit risque, but absolutely hysterical. We were laughing so hard, driving home, I got the giggles. And driving at 75 miles an hour and having the giggles is not a combination. We got home and my wife said, you could be funny too. I'm like, oh, let's give it a try. So I called Nick and I said, hey, how do I get in there doing jokes? He goes, well, come to an open mic night and try it. Did a couple of open mics. Nick and I became fast friends. He was best man at my wedding, and I've known him for close to 25 years now. And we started doing comedy in Spokane. The place was the season ticket right across the street from the arena. Mm-hmm. And we had a really, really good time doing it. And then I traveled went to Idaho, Montana, Dakota, a little bit into Wyoming with a friend. You got to put your road time into doing comedy because it's almost like combat comedy. It's very tough. You get your local comedy club and you've been there a long time. You know the crowds, they're coming back. It gets very, I won't say easy, but you get comfortable with it. You don't push your jokes, you don't push your humor. So we went on the road and did that for about 2-3 weeks, came back and worked the door, open mic, opened the show with a few jokes to kind of warm up the crowd. Obviously, my comedy career never took off because I'm wearing the uniform, but I had an absolute blast doing it.
Yeah, and you still do it today, right?
Occasionally. I do some roasts. If I'm in Spokane, and there's a couple of comedy clubs still in Spokane, if I have the opportunity to do 5 or 10 minutes, I will. I've forgotten most of my set, and a lot of it's changed over the years from when I first started this comedy. A lot of depreciating humor, just trying to find, hey, what's my niche? What's my comedy like? But unless you continue to refine it and work on it and build it, your jokes become stagnant. I've known Nick so long, all the people that did the comedy with him, we could tell his jokes or his set with him as he told the jokes. But I still have a good time doing it. I love it.
Yeah. What kind of influenced you to even attempt comedy, right? Was there like somebody you watched growing up that you were like, that guy's funny and I think I could be like that? And then when you had that chance, you were like, hey, I'm going to do this.
Well, George Carlin, of course, growing up, listened to Richard Pryor. Steve Martin was a big influence. And you watch all these comics and how they deliver. Of course, Eddie Murphy, when he came out with Delirious and some of those shows in the 80s. Absolutely fantastic. And I got to give props to Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory was the old school comic. Very, very, probably one of the godfathers of comedy. and you see how they deliver to their punchlines. And it's not the observational. Have you ever noticed when you're on an airplane, kind of the, oh, I'm trying to think of the name, Jerry Seinfeld, that type of stuff. That definitely wasn't me. Are they dirty jokes? Are they clean jokes? A dirty joke's easy to say. A well-constructed clean joke is very, very tough. And you just start doing your comedy. You have a set list. You have jokes you're going to say. If you have a really good audience, you could play off that audience and do your entire set. If you have a bad audience or they're really, really tough crowd, you can go through all your material in 5, 10, 15 minutes because you're just jokes. And, okay, what joke fits where? How is the audience reacting? What material do they want to go for? George Carlin, probably my favorite because he was not only observational, but he was like your own personal zeitgeist. He had the pulse on what we were thinking in the United States. And he's probably one of the godfathers of comedy to me. I really liked his style, but I definitely didn't have his intelligence and I didn't have the time to write. It takes a lot of time to write a joke, to craft it. Then you have to get on stage and perfect it. If you notice, when Dave Chappelle ever does a new joke or new sets, he'll go to some of the local comedy clubs. There's one in Ohio. He'll work out his material. And when it first starts out, it's bad. And he goes, okay, that joke didn't work. I'm going to move this over here. And he perfects his craft, perfects his set. Then he goes on stage and does it for larger audiences. I just didn't have the time to do it. And quite frankly, I mean, I was a decent comic. I could make people laugh. But as a profession, no way. Not at all.
Any kind of memories from kind of your career in comedy that just kind of stand out?
When I was traveling with my friend Jay, we went to Billings, Montana. We did a show for four people. And in the room, it was almost, I think it was like a Holiday Inn type-ish place. And the people were all in the back of the room. And Jay says, everyone come up to the front. And we just sat down in chairs in front of them and we told our jokes. We had a good time. We were doing a show for the Vanessa Behan Crisis Nursery. And if you're in Spokane, if you want to give to a charity, they're a good place to do it. They help single moms that are between houses. It's a great place for those young mothers who have no other resources. We're doing a benefit for them. And I think it was about 1,000 people there. And I got up and I did my best material. It was like 5 minutes, hammered it. And the entire audience is just laughing. And when you get that feedback and you get that rush, and especially comedy is so positive. Humor is the best medicine. You make people laugh. It's positive energy. Mm-hmm. Again, try to say bubblegum angry.
Oh, bubblegum. You can't.
You can't do it. So when you've got that immediate feedback from 1,000 people laughing at something you just said, and you're like, oh God, this is a good feeling. It's a rush. That's probably one of the best memories I'll ever have for doing comedy.
Yeah. But you always kind of had the guard there, right? To fall back on.
Thank God.
And it sounds like the guard just wasn't a you decision. It was a family decision. It's something you've always had kind of with you, with your father, father-in-law and that kind of stuff. What does the guard really mean to you as someone who's served in it and has grown up in it?
Citizen soldier, giving something back. My parents are JFK Democrats. I was raised as a JFK Democrat. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. My parents firmly believe that. Give something back to a country that's given us or given me the opportunity to fail or succeed based on my own merits. I've been very lucky in life. I've worked very hard for a lot of that luck. I have a house. I have a beautiful wife. Yeah, Lisa. I have all the creature comforts and I have high-speed internet. I cannot complain about my station in life. But wearing the uniform, it's more than self. It's the soldiers I work with. It's the great NCOs and great officers and the mentorship. Working in the directorate community is a little different than working at the company level. The products that I put out or whatever form or report or write-up that I have to do has to be spot on. There's no ambiguity because with Flipples, these commanders, these battalion and brigade commanders, they can take soldiers' money if they've lost, damaged, or destroyed property if they're negligent for it. So when you look at what they're writing and how they're writing it, I mean, this is, you have an opportunity to take something. You can affect their life by taking their money. Or if they're out of service, they may not get a tax return. And that could really affect someone's life. So every I has to be dotted, every T has to be crossed, has to be done correctly. And when you've got those, especially when you have very, those 06s who demand that quality product, that you attention to detail, slow down to speed up. Everything has to be dressed right, dressed. Because some of the stuff, some of these flippers go to the general for it. And I don't want to go in front of the one star with a bad product or a lot of grammatical errors or something that makes no sense at all. So it's that, it's the attention to detail, and they're holding me to a higher expectation. I think one of the reasons I've been lucky is I've had great mentors in the Washington Army National Guard who have held me to that higher expectation. And if I don't meet it, they pulled me aside. Hey, Sergeant Smelser, Todd, we need to fix this. This is what you need. This is what right looks like. Make it look right. And it's been that way my entire career. And that I would probably have to attribute that to my success more than anything else in the world is I had those great officers, those great NCOs, some civilians that is, we put out a good product. It's not because of the product, but who you are. And this is what we expect of you.
And you still got a lot of laughs out of it, I imagine.
Absolutely, I do. Yes. I will say one thing. Never write a 5-paragraph operator operations order in Klingon. That will not work. And never answer the radio like it's an automated system. Hi, you reached the Maverick Main. To reach the battalion commander, press 1. To reach the XO, press 2. I had my sergeant major. I tried that once in the field, and it lasted maybe 30 seconds, and I got pulled to the side. He thought it was the funniest thing he ever heard in the world, but don't ever do that again.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Hey, I appreciate you joining us, Todd, and kind of sharing a little bit of your story and your history in the Guard and really what serving means to you. If you like the video, give it a like, subscribe to the channel for more, and comment if you want to know more about it. I appreciate it.